member of WildGamesProductions.com and D20Radio.com. You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with gold and jewels, and a red dragon. He starts to breathe. Save or die!
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classic Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Adventure number 25, the Save or Die Podcast. With me this week, I am DM Vincent. I have DM Julie, DM Mike, DM Glenn, and DM Crispy. How we doing, everybody? All at once.
Pretty good.
Very well.
Thanks, guys.
Not bad.
Hello, Vincent. How are you, my boy?
Just wonderful.
Thank you very much. I'm trying to learn to lower my voice.
Oh, that's great, Glenn. You're practicing for another stage play?
No, it's just that Thaco's Hammer, I listened to the last two shows, and I'm up like this. Hi, this is Thaco's Hammer. It's like, God, I sound like a dork.
You're going, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so now, hello, Thaco's Hammer, Save or Die, hello, how are you?
Yes, the Save or Die Podcast, and the, very good, oh, ho, 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 ho.
Right. Remember down in that dungeon of the third level, anyway.
I had to laugh
our
at the
British
last...
listeners are laughing their heads off.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, hell yes.
I had to laugh at our last Book of Sorrows. Crispy's character found the scepter and he started talking like, oh, I'm king of the dwarves.
You then, get me my water.
Oh, lovey.
He turned into Thurston Howell the dwarf.
Bone to dash.
Just the touch of Mr. Burns.
Yeah. Yes.
Shall we go down into the cauldron room?
Sure. Glenn, this week we won't kick you down the stairs. We'll just trip you down the stairs.
Oh, thank you very much. Look out. Oh, dear. I'm so sorry. Here we are.
You keep our feet from getting mussed.
By walking on Glenn?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's a theory, anyway.
This week, I just want to remind everybody that we do have Save or Die official t-shirts, thanks to Glenn's official drawing.
Yay.
And you could pick them up by going to our website, and you click on the link called Sod Swag.
Sod Swag.
Sod Swag, yeah. And then there is a t-shirt there, and you can get it as low as about $12 with the discount coupon going on right now. And I believe it's t-shirts sale 1, and that will give you 10% off up until April, so...
And they're really sexy.
Yeah, I got my shirt. It looks awesome. I can't wait to wear it at Gen Con, because mine says Gen Con 2011 on the back.
Buy one today.
Yes, Mike bought one, and he's getting his soon, and Liz has one, and Crispy's buying one some, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we got the other show's t-shirt coming out, and I will be buying both of them.
Yes. So. I'll be putting up the other shows up there as well shortly.
Yes.
So, yes. So, Glenn, what do we have for emails?
What do we got for emails? Don't you want to know what I did this week? Okay, we'll do emails first.
Emails first.
Okay, we got two or three here. First one is from Game Ogre. Hello, Game Ogre. Hi. And it says, do a section on the race level limits, race class limits, and why it's used or not used in your game. And he goes on to say, I do not like them at all. I feel that they limit the PC after a certain level and limit his fun. Who wants to play someone who's getting passed by the other party members? Getting people to stick with the game over long term is often hard enough. Why add things in that to hinder the act of having fun? I know many disagree, but I have yet to really hear a good reason. Balance is not a reason, as basic doesn't really do balance thing much at all. And even if it did, it just gives humans a bonus as well and move on. Love Gary, but I feel he had a flaw in the whole demi-human limits thing, human-centered world thing. And that is Game Ogre. Thank
Can
you,
I
Game.
Take this one?
Yeah,
go ahead.
All right, so I disagree with Game Ogre. Because if you look at things like the amount of hit points you get after X amount of experience points per level, especially in the Rule Cyclopedia, I think like Mensur or it's the Mensur rules, but they really did a lot to kind of help balance that out, because in the Rules Cyclopedia everything is done off a table, you know, as it should
right.
be. And they actually get different bonuses to hit after X amount of experience points. They go up in attack rank.
And they also give you the option of changing those race limits, right?
Yeah. But the thing really that you're only missing out on some hit dice, which really isn't that big of a deal, especially since like demi-humans get all these special weird powers that allow them to operate a little bit better in certain situations than others. So if you look at it mechanics-wise, it's really not that big of a deal. Because like a dwarf goes up to, what, 8th level? No, halfling. Halfling goes up to 8th level, so that's 8 hit dice. That's 24 hit dice, or 24 hit points, rather. Whereas like a fighter goes up to, say, 20th level, but they only get 9 hit dice. After that, it's plus 3 HP per level. So really, you're not missing out on that much. If you're going with like a magic using class, yes, you kind of they do get more powerful. But that's the point of being a magic user: is you start out weak, and then you eventually make your way up in strength. It's the whole quadratic wizard versus linear fighter argument, but I don't want to get into that. And no, then, even if you look at the expanded Holmes rules that somebody drafted up, I can't remember who it was. They kind of help to do that. It only goes up to 9th level, so the balance isn't that bad. But then if you look at like Labyrinth Lord, since I know today we're going to be talking about retro clones, elves go up to 10th levels, dwarves go up to like 9th or 10th as well. And then they still, everything is on a 20 level progression, so they do still receive hit points for experience points. So, really, you're not missing out on that much.
Anybody have anything to add to that?
Well, I just think just the fact that in Metzer and or Rule Cyclopedia, they give you the option of getting rid of those limits with certain reservations. That shouldn't to me, it's a non issue.
I don't remember Metzer giving you the option to get rid of it. Did it? Does it?
Well, I believe in the Rule Cyclopedia. I'm going by
the RC Metzer.
Oh, well. Cares. What did you have to say, Mike?
Maybe the rules were in the Master's set. I don't know. I've never read it.
Probably right.
Anyway, but as far as the human-centric, it's just one of those, does your character get more powers at the front end or the back end of creation? And if you decide you don't want a human-centric campaign, then by all means, throw it out. That's what you want to do.
Yeah, but humans have always got the shaft in all the games, so, let them have something for once.
This has been a sore point since the beginning, so, because there's just some people out there who will not play a human, just will not play a human.
I always play humans.
Even when they're not gaming.
Julie.
Later editions did a lot to kind of help bridge the gap between human and non-human, because you get a few mechanical benefits for being a human that other races don't, and those mechanical benefits actually kind of outweigh the benefits of being a demi-human.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll hope that helped you, Game Ogre.
Write in soon at the Save or Die Podcast at gmail.com.
That's right. And our next email is from Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. Says, hi, folks. I had to laugh at you saying Liz has one fan. Liz has many fans, but she is a married woman. Her fan base is online, and most of these fans are probably married guys themselves. It would be most awkward for Eowyn to say how much they like hearing her on the Save or Die podcast. The truth is, you all do a great job and are all appreciated. Please keep up the great work. Cheers, Andrew. Mike, you want to take this one?
Well, since Liz isn't here, she'll be happy to know.
And the rest of us are afraid to. Go ahead.
I just answered, but Glenn overrode me, I guess.
Sorry.
Anyway, I was saying, she'll be happy to know she has more than one fan. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the kudos to all of us.
Yes. Thank you very much, Andrew. And I think that's about it, except Twitter notice. Andrew Cocky is now following us on Twitter.
Thank you for reading. Yeah.
Who comes with these Plowman Cocky? Okay.
Yes, you can follow the Save or Die podcast. I believe it's maybe I don't even know what it is on Twitter because we don't use it.
That's
so
right.
So I don't know how they're following
us.
Follow
Vince.
The tweet at Save or Die Staff.
Oh, Save or Die Staff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Save Staff.
I don't even use it. I just use it to rebroadcast the show to just.
I never use it for anything.
I use my own, like the evil DM. So.
Well. That's been an interesting few emails, anyway.
So, what have you been doing in gaming anytime recently, Crispy?
Earlier this week, I bought the Advanced Edition Companion for Labyrinth Lord. I'm hoping to get that going alongside my Pathfinder game that's starting up today. So, right after this, I'm going to go play my first session of Pathfinder.
Pathfinder?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Congratulations.
I like Pathfinder.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to it, but I'm kind of not because I feel like I kind of got a little bit pressured into playing because I wanted to take my time between last campaign and this campaign. And now that I was working on it yesterday, I'm getting kind of excited for it.
Good.
Well, if I had time, I'd join you, but I have obligations to Thacko's podcast. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, right.
And what have you been doing, loudmouth back there, Glenn?
Oh, I'm glad you distinguished me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I haven't doing any gaming, but I bought some more stuff to read. I've got a second edition Monstrous Manual on order from a guy, and I just bought the Campaign Sourcebook and Catacomb Guide for a second. Those are for second edition, so that's about it, and I'll shut up.
Okay. And, Julie, you been doing any writing or reading or anything recently?
No, just trying to get caught up on producing, so...
Producing what, Julie? Tell us about it.
My show, 19 Nocturne Boulevard.
Where you can find it at...
www.19nocturneboulevard.com. That's 19 Nocturne Boulevard.
Wow.
Don't try and type all the mistakes in. You'll never
Now, can you do that in a really sexy voice, Julie?
Oh, I need to be sexier?
Yeah.
At this time of the morning?
Well...
No, don't continue.
I won't continue that because gamers are notorious.
Yes. Everyone's going to be like, oh, more Julie all the time.
I tell you, you can make a pile in a sext line.
Clang.
So, Julie, I have a question.
I've done that.
Uh-oh.
about 19 Nocturne Boulevard. When is the next Dead Eye Kid coming out?
Oh, Lord.
My iTunes feed has two episodes fours. I don't know why I pluralized both those. Yeah, my iTunes feed. I have Taste of the Beholder episode four. Taste of the Beholder episode four. What? It's 1 second less.
Oh, I think I had accidentally typed in when I was... Because I tend to put them up like in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And I'm not always very bright at that time. I'll go check on that, though. It's good to know.
Yeah.
But it's actually up to episode 7, should be coming out sometime soon.
Cool. Mike?
Unfortunately, I'm still suffering from winter.
Aww. Winter in Seattle.
This is odd. As I'm talking to you about this, my feed is updating with the new episode of Sword Kvetch.
Well, it's actually an old episode. I've been putting a lot of the first season episodes have been going up in the feed because they were on a different feed.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's a lovely one for fantasy fans, though, because that's your classic Amazon comes to a castle to rescue a prince from an evil wizard.
Yay.
That's a great one.
Right on.
I'm going to have to listen to it.
It's a living.
So, Professor Mike.
Yeah?
What have you been up to, Grandpa?
Stuff.
Oh, cool.
Actually, I didn't run my game this week because I'm catching up on some papers.
Oh, I saw you guys were playing
next week.
Oh.
Huh?
I thought I saw you guys were playing.
No. I had to cancel out at the last minute basically yesterday morning or afternoon. I emailed saying, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to be able to do it.
Was that was that your 2E game?
No.
No, that's my 1E game.
Oh, okay.
The 2E game I just play in, so that's a lot easier. I can just go, you know, sure, I'm here. Whatever.
How's that going?
So far, so good. I've been getting killed and having a great time.
I'm drowning in splat books. Well, help.
Yeah, I keep.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of Forgotten Realms, so you know, and really? He's running it there.
Yeah,
so,
neither am I.
But it's, you know, tolerate it. I get to play, you know, rather than running everything. Which between the 1E game, the occasional Holmes game, and the Victorious game that I'm still trying to get published, and you know, I don't have a lot of time to just play.
Cool.
What about you, Vince?
Still working on the Book of Sorrows. We had another wonderful adventure this week that everybody had fun except for Crispy. And you know, I keep
busting. What did you do to Trask?
Well, Trask, I don't know. I think Trask was a little upset during the adventure because of what happened to him. So,
what happened to me?
I don't know. You weren't really there. You were busy typing in other chats, so I don't know.
I wasn't typing in other chats. I just have it open. That's why I set myself to do not disturb, so you guys don't hear every time they type something.
Trask lost most of his eyebrows and his hair.
My beard. You took away my beard, Vince. It's the worst thing you can do to a dwarf ever.
Now
your ring of regeneration would fix that.
I'd say about two more recordings and the Book of Sorrows is pretty much going to be done because they found the last half. Now they just have to figure out how to destroy the book because they're in the last part now.
The last part was, like, I'm confused about that. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Because, well, I don't want to give anything away, but, like, some stuff is going on.
Some stuff is going on?
Are you sure it's stuff and not junk?
Yeah, really.
No, it's stuff. We found an artifact, I think. It's like a deck of many things-esque card, so some funny stuff did come out of that.
Oh, God, yeah.
So that's how you lost your beard. You got a sex change off the deck. Okay.
No, I got coughed on by some, like, weird, diseased guy.
He sneezed on you guys.
Yeah.
He sneezed your beard off?
He was a disease. The guy was diseased, and it was like some percent chance I had on the paper. It's not in front of me for them to catch it. So I had the guy sneeze, and one of the other characters moved, but Crispy failed his saving throw versus what I chose. And
I caught
saving
mage.
Throw versus phlegm.
Yes, and he got all phlegmed on, then all of a sudden his beard started falling off.
Dwarven mange.
Another character's eyebrow was just falling off in the middle of talking, and he was like, okay, I'll shut up now.
His teeth were coming out. It was... But, like, the last, I want to say, half hour of the game is, like, I don't know what's going on. We need to investigate that more.
Because, like,
we have the book, like, and we've had the book the whole time, but someone else also has the book. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to leave it at that, so...
The best part of the whole entire adventure is when I went, and we'll leave it up the next week, and everyone's like, oh, come on!
So you've got one edition, and they've got another edition?
Apparently so.
I think that was joked about.
The second edition rules
the second
of the book.
Edition.
Book of Sorrows, yeah.
The reprinting, yeah. Okay.
It's got the foreword by Abdul Azhared.
Yeah. Seriously, I should just make the Book of Sorrows into a basic campaign because I talk about it more here than RFI, so...
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Well, we'll leave it at that and we'll head into Game On.
Okay! Game On!
Game On!
Game On!
So, Game On this week. This was actually suggested by Game Ogre in the Dragon's Foot forums. And Mike and I were saying this is probably a pretty good idea to actually dedicate a whole show to this, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's all about how to play old school. Or basically old school gaming in general. So, there's various books. He wanted to know basically how to... play like we play mostly in the day, what books, what retrochrones equal what books. So we're going to talk a little bit about retrochrones right now. So let's go around and we'll just talk about their favorite retrochrones. Mine personally is probably going to be the Sword and Wizardry one. Or the Labyrinth Lord. I'm going to probably go with the Labyrinth Lord because that's closer to the Molvay Cook.
Okay.
And where is that? Goblin Games? Goblin?
No. Goblinoid.
Yeah. Goblinoidgames.com.
Which one do you favor, Crispy?
I'm, like, if it is not, I'm a big Labyrinth Lord fan. I've looked at, like, Osric for first edition stuff. The Osric book I have is, like, a 400-page PDF. It's really dense, so I don't like it quite as much. I really like what Labyrinth Lords is done with, like, the supplements, like, original edition characters and advanced edition companions, because you can kind of plug in these different variables and have, like, your own version of basic.
Yeah, and all these.
So, like, I'm a big fan of, like, Brown Book and Holmes, how they do the stat bonuses. You know, you get like plus one after 13, and that's it.
Is there a Holmes clone?
There's not a Holmes clone.
Glenn, do you know?
Not yet.
Not that I know of. They're working
on it. Not yet, but the guys at Brave Halfling are working on a clone
of Holmes.
What's the name of that?
Delving Deeper.
Delving Deeper. Right. Yeah, that looks interesting. I'm keeping my eye
on it. In fact, I think they want us to proof some of it.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Cool. Yeah, they wrote us and said, you guys want to, we got about a third of it through. If you want to take a look through it and give us
I'm definitely interested in that.
Well, I would think that Liz and Crispy would be the two people that would definitely want to look through that, being Holmes.
Yeah, Liz especially.
Yeah. They're the Holmes fans on this group, so.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, I'll keep you guys posted. I'm still waiting for a word back. I told them we'd be happy to. So,
yeah. Cool. So, Glenn, which one do you favor?
Well, I favor, as you probably could guess, Dark Dungeons.
Never heard of it.
Dark Dungeons or Osric. Osric is, of course, an first edition.
No.
Dark Dungeons is the Rule Cyclopedia retro clone.
Never heard of that book either.
All right.
I haven't looked at it. I don't know if they have do they have a free version of that?
Yeah, they do.
I believe that, yeah, they do. They have they have a free version, and they also have a pre-printer-friendly version.
Hmm. Yeah, all the retro clones are free to download PDF, and you can print them on whatever, if you want to go to Kinko's or on your own printer if you feel like
me.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah. That's my poison of choice. And how about you, Vince? Give me a chance to pull up their address.
Well, actually, I already answered that, so I'm going to go to Mike.
You did, didn't you? Okay, Michael. I'm sorry.
Well, let me say that just for people who aren't aware, all the retro clones are not 100% clones.
Right.
Of their box sets. They do some things differently, some to greater and lesser extents.
They're tweaked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have to be.
Now, that being said, and I know I'll get pilloried for this, currently, my favorite retro clone is Castles and Crusades.
Uh-oh, let's disconnect, Mike. No, I'm kidding.
I have no problem with that. What's wrong with that? I've got a copy of it.
It's too... I think a lot of people don't like it because it's too, like, 2000 edition games.
Two, three, five.
It uses Ascending Armor class, which Swords and Wizardry does too.
It does.
It also has a prime system, which is supposed to reflect how the various saving throw tables worked in old D&D, but it doesn't use the tables.
It's working more
for the feel of the game rather than the copy of the rules.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I would probably, whenever Delving Deeper comes out, that will, unless it's just really out there, I suspect that's going to become my retro of choice.
Hmm.
If they manage to stick to their mantra of what they're aiming for, the mandate of this game. And I think John Adams will, I suspect that will be becoming. But, more often than not, it's like, if I want to play basic, I play basic. If I want to play
AD&D,
I play AD&D. I don't go to a retro clone.
Well, that's because we grew up playing the regular games. That's why.
Right. But if you're not sure about a game and you want to look at a free version that's pretty close to it, go to a retro clone PDF. That's the best way to kind of window shop it.
But C&C isn't free, though.
No. No,
that's
it is
the only
not.
One
and
at all.
Why I don't really, it's on the fence of whether or not it's really a retro clone, and that's one of the things I don't like about it is not free as a PDF. So, of the various retro clones that attempt to copy, it also doesn't try to copy any one type of old school gaming. It tries to be more of a collection of them all.
Yeah.
That's why
a retro clone.
What?
I was going to say, that's why, like, I don't really, like, I've read through Castles and Crusades and I like it because of the unified mechanic, because I think that's always a good idea. But as far as it goes, I don't really think it's like a clone, because it's not trying to clone. It's just going for the feel.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Which... And I probably, upon that, thinking about it, I would probably drop CNC and just say I don't have a current retro clone.
Okay.
I mean, I like them all to various degrees. I played Labyrinth Lord. I played Sword and Wizardry. They're great.
Yeah, if you're probably a 3.5 player or a 4.0 player, the best place to look would be Castle and Crusades, probably for the old school feel.
Yeah, and it makes it easier. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you're wanting to, especially if you've got like a group of 3 and 3.5ers, I don't know so much about 4 because I've never looked at it. But if you're wanting to get them toward old school but don't want to bring them cold turkey, CNC makes a great bridge drug. What's there? Gateway drug.
What's that other one we had to talk about? Oh, Basic Fantasy RPG, too.
Yeah.
That's 3.5 with the old school feel, even though they claim it's not 3.5, but anyway.
Yeah.
And it is available. Isn't it free?
Yeah, basic. Yeah, that's for free. Download, yeah.
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 I'll throw in all the links for all these things on the show notes on the webpage so we can... So everybody can figure out where to get them. But we only really... The only ones that we really support on the webpage are the SNW and the Labyrinth Lord and probably now the Deeper... What's the Deeper Delve or...
Delving Deeper.
Delving Deeper. Whatever.
Yeah, I remember one that was... I don't remember who, like, tweeted about it, but that's how I found out about it. I'm really interested in seeing, like, what it's going to be about. Because one of the reasons I like Labyrinth Lord so much is because it does have those two supplement books, and you can... Everything is compatible with everything else. It's still running off the, quote-unquote, Labyrinth Lord engine, which is, you know, just Marsh Cook. But, like, it brings in a lot of the AD&D stuff that is kind of simplified to run with Basic.
Oh, yeah.
Well, on their blog for Delving Deeper, which, by the way, I like the name because it acronyms to DD, but anyway, they mentioned that some of their core mechanics they are using from Labyrinth Lord.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, not necessarily all, but that's going to be kind of a foundation point. So it's technically going to be in the Labyrinth Lord series of games.
Oh,
as far as connectivity.
Well, Labyrinth Lord rules are part of the open gaming license anyway, so.
Right.
Yeah. Didn't the guys who from Brave Halfling work on Labyrinth Lord? Or they had some kind of connection to it, I believe.
I don't know. I know they were running Swords of Wizardry White Box for a while. Mm-hmm. Brave Halfling was selling it, but I don't know that they ever actively promoted Labyrinth Lord. They were certainly, you know, behind it as far as any of the retro clones, certainly, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Strange.
Write us, John, and let us know.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
so speaking of retro clones.
Yeah?
Legends of the Flame Princess, Mike. I know you've been
Lamentations of the Flame Princess.
Sorry.
I'm still looking through it. I can't give an opinion one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And in fact, after the episode, we need to talk about how we're going to get that shifted around and everything.
Yeah, okay.
And what exactly we're going to do with this big pile of stuff donated by John Gaunt for prizes for various things.
Well, we'll talk after the show about that since you brought that up, because I was thinking about that the other day, then I forgot, and then you brought it back up.
Sure. That would be nice.
But yeah, I have heard Lamentations of the Flame Princess also is a retro clone. I do not believe it is available as a PDF, though.
No, it's not. You're right.
Not a free one, I mean.
No.
Well, retro clones, that's also good for people who just cannot get a copy of the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a quick list, Swords and Wizardry is closest to original D&D. Labyrinth Lord is, like Vince said, Mold They Cook. Osric is 1EA D&D. Am I forgetting anything?
Dark Dungeons is Encyclopedia D&D.
Something or Slash Mincer.
Yeah, Slash Mincer. And Castles and Crusades is kind of a 3.35 gateway into the old school world.
And school that's, yeah.
Yeah, basic fantasy RPG is same thing sort of way.
Yeah. Same thing, but it's available for free.
What about the gateway? It's the gateway drug to basic D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, have you looked at Microlight 74 or Microlight whatever 79, whatever it's called?
No, I think you're right. I think it's 74. I've heard of it, but I haven't looked at it.
Yeah, because I was looking through Retro Clones before the show, and I came upon that, and I was like, I've seen this before, but I wasn't sure what it's really about.
I think, and this is, I could be way off base here, but I think it's something along the lines of Chainmail with Fantasy Supplement.
Yeah. That's what they're putting it as.
Oh, okay. You got it, Glenn. Okay.
Yeah, okay. It's like, oh, this is the way D&D would have written if they'd actually kept it based in Chainmail.
There is just so many retro clones that people have made that aren't in the front public. Like, we found that... remember, Mike, we found the Grey Book that had the Holmes cover on it, but it was mashed of, like, old-school D&D, and it was, like, Mensur and first edition that guy made up.
Yeah, I've heard of this one.
Yeah, basically, his interpretation of where Holmes would have went if it continued above third level.
Right.
And... stuff some of it I liked, edition, some of it I didn't.
Stuff from first edition and basic and all these other stuff things.
But then I suppose we could probably say that about any of the versions, you know? Mm-hmm. Some of it we like, some of it we don't.
And some of them get damn close to the original, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like, okay, we had to change a word here and there, but that's the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, I think we get enough of our retro clones. Let's head over to in designing characters now. What methods we all like to support or use for designing our characters, naming our characters, and maybe basically getting a background for our character. Maybe bringing the character to life, making it three-dimensional, as opposed to the one-dimensional that most people make. This is Bob the Fighter. He has a sword, and he has a spear, and he has a hat, and he likes to kill stuff.
But that's old school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lot of people like to put more into their character than that, Mike. I'm gonna jump over to Julie for this one because she is full of backgroundy wisdom and everything.
So, you know, talking just generally about, you know, fleshing out characters.
Yeah, how you make them more 3D like or lifelike.
I'm a terrible example because I never have a problem with that, but no, in helping other people to do it.
Yeah.
There have been, over the years, and Lord knows I can't name any of them, a variety of products that have come out with that in mind, where people could roll or select from tables different kinds of, you know, personal events or whatever. And they, a lot of times, weren't affiliated with any particular game, though I know some games do come out with them. But in general, the main thing I encourage, some games encourage journaling. Some games actually will give people more points for characters that are created with entire backstories. Mm-hmm. I know that's one of those other whole different game things, points. But you know what it's if you can justify extra skills, sometimes you'll get extra, you know, it's like, I know how to woodcraft or whatever. I mean, I know that I play way too many games, as I always point out. But a lot of times, all it really comes down to is either, you know, you encourage them to do something, you bring up stuff from their backstory, or peer pressure. Because other players will mock you if your character is stupid.
And all those people with complete backstories, that's basically for the DM plot hooks on the hoof.
Well, exactly. And one of the reasons that it is encouraged by a lot of DMs is that, you know, oh, my family was wiped out by a bandit lord and, you know, oh, well, it turns out there was a reason for it. It's because you're the chosen one with a lucky strike on your forehead. Whoops, that was stolen from Harry Potter. And, you know, it's, well, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with adopting a backstory from something in fiction.
Right.
You know, it just can't be too obvious. Because if the GM recognizes it and the players recognize it, then all of a sudden you're like, yeah.
Though I would say it is kind of hard to get a group together when every one of them are bitter loners in black whose families have been wiped out. And
that is something that in every game you come across. People who want to be that character who no one would ever in their right mind want to work with, and yet at the same time, they want to be talked into being part of the group.
Yeah.
Because they always want to be the one that they have to be convinced to be joining the group. It's like, but when somebody has to convince all six of you to join the group.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's something we come across in LARPs a lot is people who want to do that. And you have to remind them that if you're that person, there is a good chance that you're just going to be sitting at the back of the bar all day. And you're never, ever going to have an adventure.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy sitting in the corner. My family left me. My life is over. I'm not going to be talking to anyone unless they hand me a lot of gold.
Right. Either that or you slip everyone some sort of, like, you know, weird item that they can't get rid of until they complete the quest. And it's quite horrific because it makes them grow hair on the palms of their hands or something.
Glenn, keep quiet.
I shaved mine.
Something that they would certainly want to get rid of, and yet at the same time, they can't.
Sort of quag keepish there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Force everyone. Oh my gosh, somebody remembers quag keep.
Hey, I'm old.
Aren't we all?
We're all old here. Well, Crispy's not, but.
Yeah. Hi, guys. I'm 23.
Shut up.
You could be our child.
If you were dyslexic, you'd be 32.
That's true.
All right, piss off, you young whippersnapper.
So, Crispy,
since
you're the youngin' in the group and you're more used to the newer rules of playing games, looking back into the retro years and the retro clones, how would you design your character to bring it to life?
I have a very old school, like, I actually just read something this week on The Escapist called, it's like High Adventure, some like Tales of High Adventure, I think the blog is called. But they were talking about the article was when characters were made, not born.
Right.
And, you know, like all my friends, they're new school like gamers. And I'm a new school gamer. I play Pathfinder. I've played 3.5. I've played a little bit of second edition, which I still think is a little old school. But when they make characters, they like have these big, huge, elaborate backstories and like personalities and all kinds of stuff like that. When I play a character, I don't design what they're going to be like until like the first three sentences out of his mouth. And then I go, okay, that's what this guy is about.
Well, let's look at Trask for a minute, the character you're playing in my game.
Mm-hmm.
How did you figure out he was going to be the cliché dwarf, as someone said?
Oh, yes, he's so cliché.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, it's first edition. There's not a lot mechanically that I can do different. So I want to make this guy as fun and entertaining as possible while still being different from, you know, every other dwarf. Turns out I ended up failing, though.
Because that was one person.
I know. So, like, I'm like, okay, well, he's going to be really short, and he'll have a Napoleonic complex about it. And then, you know, like, just when he wanted to help Galvin and Bellinor in the tab. Or in the bar, you know, he kind of jumped up and was like, no, you guys, you're all weak and pasty looking. Let me go ahead and kill all the bad stuff for you.
And
that's how Trask was born.
The pirate voice?
The pirate voice.
Want to explain a little bit about the pirate voice?
The pirate voice is just my dwarf voice. That's just the accent I give them.
Every dwarf speaks like a pirate?
Pretty much.
Oh, all right. I'm just curious.
They're sort of Scottish.
Yeah, that's my dwarves. They're all kind of like this, you know.
They're Russian.
No, Scottish.
I'm just breaking.
You know, just like Dinkus.
They're all Dolph Lundgren now, all of a sudden.
They all sound like Dinkus now, so yeah.
In Myriad, my Amazon sounds Scottish.
Yeah.
What's your sword sound like?
She doesn't have a talking sword. Now, Sword Kvetch, the episode that just went up, has the Amazon of the talking sword. The one in Myriad is her cousin.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
What about you, Mike?
Well, when you're running old school, and that's part of the problem, you get these people, they build elaborate backstories, and then they're crushed by a falling brick.
Yeah.
Halfway in the dungeon, you know, or they fell in a pit trap. Your character you just spent an hour on a backstory is dead. And they get pissed, and it's like, well, and I think like Crispy was saying earlier, you know, heroes are made, not born. It's
yeah.
always been kind of a rule of thumb when you start a character, don't get much detail into them
right.
until they get second, third, or even fourth level.
Yeah.
Then start working a real background.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they probably aren't going to die halfway into the dungeon.
That's what I do with most of my characters that I design. I'll start out with a cookie cutter and then form him as the time goes on and then jot things down that happens to him to write some of his backstory.
Yeah. I mean, at most, I might give him just one personality quirk, like a fighter in the 2E game I'm playing named. Fernando. He is known for his magnificent mustachios. And that's all anyone really knows about him. He's got this huge black mustache, you know, curled at the ends. And you know,
I love that.
What, Julie?
There's nothing wrong with starting with, you know, something that's a recognizable stereotype that you can then enlarge on.
Yeah.
One reason I like, you know, for many years I played modern day games is because you're not limited by a world that people have to learn before they can make a character. If you're dealing with, you know, your typical D&D world, you've got a typical pseudo-medieval society, and most people can work around that. But there are people who are coming into a game who do get intimidated when they're like, oh, well, where can I be from? And I have to know all the different countries before I can choose. And it gets very frustrating, both as a player and as a GM, when people are being that concerned, as opposed to say, okay, you can be a peasant, you can be a minor noble, whatever, and give them some idea. With a modern day game, it's very clear when you're going, you know, oh, I'm going to be a hairdresser, oh, I'm going to be a high school dropout, because they already know what the world is like.
True.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Crispy.
Yeah, so like I just want to add on to Mike's point. All my players they're artsy fartsy people. They're, you know, art majors and drama majors, and I hate it when they come to the table and like, oh, I've got this character, and oh, here's this super elaborate backstory for them where they're like, they're such a badass. I'm like, but dude, you're starting off at first level. Like you're the antithesis of a badass right now. So that's a pet peeve of mine, but like I think the best way to do it is to just start with like Mike was saying, some kind of quirk or personality trait that you can play off, and then build them from there.
Yeah, one of the guys in my basic game I was running had played, is he had a first level magic user named Twiggy, and he was he was the oldest first level magic user in the world. That was his one personality trait. He was incredibly, incredibly old, and he was only first level, so.
Cool.
And you'd think he would have died, but he didn't, actually. He survived, I think, up to third level before he died.
Nice. And I bet he was, like, super entertaining, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was part of the fun. Here. Okay, you just need to jump over the pit here. What?
Yeah, right?
Jump? No jumping. I'll just sit here. Thank you.
So, Glenn.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you do?
Well, I'm not going to say I do a cookie cutter, but what I like to do is just find like one hook to the character.
Yar.
That's all I need. I mean, I told you about that dwarf I had, Bundy, who I took the personality of a car mechanic who won't shut up about what he did to your car and put it on him. He was a dwarven engineer, so he'd constantly go through the dungeons talking about the construction of the stuff and everything, and he'd want to show, see how this one's done here, we got to do, you know, you got to take this over here, and like, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, he heard shut up more often than any other character. So I like to get, like, that just that one hook, like Mike says, Twiggy. I thought that was that's wonderful. I'll just sit here. Okay, you guys go ahead.
So as
you
far
guys
as...
go ahead, you can bring a bridge.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sit here till you build a bridge, then I'll go across.
There as far as rolling, because I know Game Over asked about rolling, that's up to the Dungeon Master pretty much to decide which method of rolling you want to use. So.
Yeah. Mine's always, you know, as far as I, as long as I, since first edition, I remember it's, for us, it's roll 4d6, take out the lowest one.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it if you don't want your
put
characters
them where you
to
want
die.
Them. Yeah.
It's whoever
yeah, the... I know that's not entirely old school, but...
Well, the you know, the Molde is...
If people
36.
Really want to play a thief, they should play a thief. I mean, yeah. You put the high number in their dex.
Yeah, after you roll, that's when it comes interesting. Do you want them to, you know, take it as it goes? You just want the six numbers there and you assign where they go or what?
It's really up to the DM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as naming, there's plenty of name generators online you could find to name.
There's a lot of warriors named Bob.
Yeah.
I got a metric.
But also, as far as, you know, when you're creating characters, you do want players to have a character that they're going to want to play. If you play absolutely hardcore role, play with what you've got, you're going to have a lot of players who want to get their character killed off so they can do it again.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Exactly.
They're not going to have any goals except getting dead so that they can start over.
Like my Charles the Expendable.
I have a couple different... I have a couple different rolling methods that we've toyed with and, you know, that, like, a lot of old school people probably don't know about that I could bring up.
Oh, I have many rolling methods, too, for different games, but I'm interested to hear what you have.
All right, so one that's suggested in Pathfinder that I've toyed with using, but I've always found that the averages are a little too high, is you start off with 6, and then you roll 2d6 on top of that.
Yeah.
So you're looking at like an average of about 13, but you know dice barely ever go with the average. So you do get a lot of like really kind of overpowered characters. Mm. And then there's 4d6 dropped the lowest, which I think
that was
like an optional thing, but over time it just kind of became the standard.
Yeah, and that most people I know tend to use that when they're playing old D&D.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Any of you use point allocation?
No, I hate that.
I have. In my campaign I'm running later after this, we used point buy.
Do they even have that in basic? I don't even know.
I don't think so.
I used to, but I basically limited it to you roll your numbers, then you roll a d4, and those are points you can add somewhere.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I haven't really used it in a bit, so...
I have not... I didn't do it until I joined the RPGA, and that's how they do it. That is standard. That's the way you want you to do it.
Yeah.
What I hated about it, though, was the fact that 10 is the average, okay? In, what was it, 3.5 I was playing then?
Yeah.
But everybody started with stats of 8.
Yeah.
So it's like, what the hell? I got to spend 2 points just to get an average score? That's
Pathfinder fixed that.
Yeah.
With their point buy. And then you would also have, like, 32 points was, like, the mainstream. And it's like, that's too much number juggling. Now it's you start off between 15 and 25, and everything starts at 10.
Yeah.
And then the values for points are different as well.
Yeah.
Personally, most of the games that I do play on a regular basis do use points allocations, or did play on a regular basis, have played. I like it because it forces... It only works... if there are stats that you cannot short, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because if you're actually having to decide between, you know, making your willpower high or making your strength high, as opposed to shorting your charisma and not giving a damn, you know, how many personal habits can you have?
Yeah, it's very power gamer friendly. But if you're playing, like, point buy is usually, like, in the RPGA or... D&D encounters or whatever, you know, you're going to be power gaming anyways because it's competitive or it's like a tournament style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I understand that. Yeah. Hero has had that since day one. It's like, you want a power game? Let's go play champions. Okay. Yeah. I have an intelligence of 3, but I have 100 strength.
and I'm allergic to air.
Yeah, there we go. They put examples in one of the books.
That is the thing, is you have to make sure that there is a consequence for shorting something.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have a stat that isn't going to come into play that they can just decide to short because they know that it's not going to be important.
Right.
Because then they actually think about where the numbers are going and don't just automatically put them all into whatever they feel is going to be the most useful.
I've made up two rolling methods when I've had like less players in a group, because the group I was in, we had a problem with people showing up and then people dropping out entirely because of jobs or because of life or because they're too lazy to come over, mm-hmm. which is the ultimate weird, but anyway.
They get locked out of their apartment, yeah.
Yeah, well, locked out of their apartment, that's it, yeah.
Crispy.
No, dude, like at a time that was just me and two other players playing in a group for like a month at a time before we had more players. So I came up with a, just so they could survive and we could play, start with a 10 stat and roll a D8.
Huh. And they get pretty interesting, actually.
And they get an average of an 11, you know, just pretty much to start you with an average of 11, so.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's about right.
And then we also did the method of when we wanted to have a little bit more powerful characters, but not as powerful, you start with an 8 and roll a 10.
Okay.
I think that's the one I would go with, because you're looking at if you've got an 8, the average of 5.5, you're looking at like 13.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
There was an old fantasy RPG back in the 70s that did that.
Really?
Or something similar. It may have been RuneQuest. Oh. Something like, I don't know. But anyway, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Another one we came up with, my roommate actually came up with this, was 6D3. So, like, for that... And no, it's actually really good because you don't get high stats as often, which is what I don't like. Your bell curve is centered more towards 12. Mm-hmm. And then we also, if you want a little more power, do 73, drop the lowest. Like, try it out. Get a dice generator, because, you know, like, you don't want to be dividing your D6s in half.
Or have D3s.
Yeah, if you can go to a game shop and get enough D3s.
There are D3 glands.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just get a... Like, it's easier to just get the six-sided dice that have 1 through 3 on them.
That's what they have, yeah.
That's
a D3.
That's right.
Just don't get it confused with your regular D6, because that can be quite a jarring experience.
Yeah,
my fireballs just aren't doing enough damage, guys. I don't know what it is. Lloyd, you're using your D3. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
I want to re-roll everything.
Okay.
No, it's been done already.
No, I want to re-roll.
Another question that Mr. Game Ogre asked was character sheets. Official ones versus taking just a piece of paper or an index card and writing it out versus a computer-printed sheet. This is pretty simple itself, so we'll just go around just whatever you preference. Just say, starting with, we'll start with Glenn.
I'll just say character sheet.
Like an official character sheet, okay.
Now, are we talking as player or DM here?
He didn't say, so let's just assume as a player.
Okay, as a player, character sheet, I've got run on the gamut of different character sheets I've designed and used official character sheets. I'm fine with the character sheet. As a DM, I'd rather use index cards. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Mike?
I'd probably say character sheets, if for no other reason, it's so much easier to get one now than back in the day. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go buy packs of sheets or anything. You just go to the net. I mean, there's thousands online of various games for free
Dragon's
download.
Dragon's Foot has a lot of them.
Yeah, Mad Irishman.
Thank you, Mad Irishman.
Mad Irishman has fantastic character sheets.
RPGsheetsgut.com.
So, I would say, you know, unless you're just offline or something, I'm not sure there is a need for the old. Although I did see one time somebody actually published a character sheet for original D&D, and it was drawn out as if it was on lined notebook paper.
Oh, wow.
I think I have that one.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a cute idea. But...
That was cool.
Let's see. We'll go to Julie. What about you?
I find that one of the advantages of published character sheets is that because they have a place for everything, you don't forget anything.
Right.
And that really makes a difference because you're halfway into the game and you're like, oh goodness, we forgot to write down your hit bonuses or something, and or your hit point die type or whatever, you know, whatever it is. You come across some obscure thing that you skipped over because you forgot, and all of a sudden it's important.
Or you forgot where you wrote it.
Yeah.
Like, where did I write my AC? Oh, crap.
Yeah. I mean, a standardized character sheet gives you the advantage of having everything exactly where it needs to be when you need it. Mm-hmm. Of course, over the years, many sheets have been published that were stupid and forgot things.
Yeah.
So, oh, tell me you haven't come across
that. I did that. I've done that myself on my own.
Definitely.
Sheets. Yes.
Chris? It's like, oh, we forgot to put a place for hit points. Is that important?
B? Crispy?
I am a fan of the, like, printed out official kind of character sheet, like everyone else. They're handier because it's homogenous, and, you know, everyone's character sheet has the same layout.
Okay.
And also, from a GM's point of view, if you have to consult the sheet, you know, if somebody, you say, hand me your character sheet, I got to look at something, you know. You know where to find it. You don't have to read the whole darn thing full of cramped gamer handwriting before you find what you're looking for.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm also big on portability, which is why I said as a DM I like the index cards. There's something online. I can't remember what it was. Oh, it's called a pocket mod. Basically, you take a piece of paper and make a little 8-page book out of it. And I designed a 3-5 character sheet for that 8-page book that you just slip in your like a shirt pocket and fill it out and just put it in there.
Interesting.
You know, I like stuff where I don't have to, oh God, I got all my sheets. Okay, I got the big binder or something. I can stick stuff in my pocket and go. That'd be great.
Wallet sized.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wallet sized. I prefer myself either a printed character sheet if I'm going to be in one location, but if I'm traveling, I actually prefer index cards. Like, not the 3-by-whatever little ones. I'm thinking more of, like, the 4-by-6s, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I'm all into the whole, let's make everything travel size, as I was talking to Glenn this past week. I got the Cook Marsh book made travel size edition now.
It's very nice.
Yeah, it's basically it was 7-by-9 the book now as opposed to what 8-9-by-whatever or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's compact. It's smaller. It's easy to move around. You know.
I can see making one of those for like throw around books for the players.
I mostly wanted it for convention reasons. You know, I can have something easily to carry around with me when I'm going to conventions.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Not that a whole book is, well, not that it's hard to carry around the Mulvey or Cook book, but, you know, something even, smaller.
That story even worked in the idea of me denim-ing some of my books with the pocket in front so I could stick, like, you know, pencils or whatever. There's more stuff someplace else I can carry around in.
Yeah. All right. Enough of that. He also wanted to have some tips on running the adventure, how to add flavor and bring your campaign to life. I think we did touch upon this a while back. But since he asked it, we'll just add upon that. And Glenn, you want to start this one? Or
how to add flavor and bring your campaign to life. Well, first of all, it's me. Of course I'm going to bring it to life.
oh, boy.
But, Crispy, you want to take this?
Well, I think I've written a little bit about this on the Save or Die website already.
While I think about this, go ahead.
I don't even know where to begin. There's just... It's pretty broad and nebulous.
Pass the buck, Mike. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, Mike, what do you do?
Hot
Mike?
Potato. Seriously?
No. one thing I like to... Like, I'll answer it. One thing I like to do with, like, monsters is... not make them textbook or rule book monsters. I like to change them a little bit. You know, like kind of add flavors or change the way they look or like make up my own ecology for them. And then for running adventures, I like to do it fast and loose. I like to make it exciting. So that, you know, helps to add flavor to it. I'm kind of balls to the rules. I'll just make something up.
balls to the rules.
Sounds
balls
like Julia's, too.
Sounds painful.
Yeah. No wonder you keep having to buy new rule books.
Wow. You okay, Glenn?
Thank you. Yeah,
okay. I think I've brought in campaigns to life by just adding some flavor, some background, just making things really weird so players have to question things more. That usually brings your campaign to life. Taking standard creatures and making pumpkin-headed creatures usually does things, or Pokemon creatures, as Crispy likes to say last time.
Pokemon, it's a great place to go and get monsters. Like, oh, yeah. Seriously.
Or having monsters behave in a way unlike what the players have seen.
Or conversely, having people behave in a way unlike what the players have seen.
That's true. Behave with monsters. I don't know.
What's more creepy, if the monster shows up for tea and all the humans start eating each other? If I may, this is another reason I do like playing modern games, and this is, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong, it's just that it's much easier if you're dealing with a group of people who you haven't been playing with for a while. If you've got people and they're very involved in your world and they understand how things work, then you can freak them out when you change things.
Throw them a curveball.
Yeah. If they're not used to the world, then it's a lot harder to do that because they don't have preconceived notions necessarily as to what is correct.
Well, I kind of disagree, because I think if they're not used to the world, you have a little bit of an easier time kind of giving them that notion that, okay, this is creepy.
Sometimes, yes, but it can't be very subtle about it, because if they don't know that, you know, every year a horde of tarantulas runs through town, then, yeah, sure, that's creepy. But especially when all the people in town just go, eh. But on the other hand, they may have totally missed something that is so obvious to a townsperson, like, the well water is green? I don't know.
Yeah, I ain't drinking that.
Or, like, the moons are different colors and they're always out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Our days last 6 months, so does our nights. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Let's hear from Mike. Mike's been quiet. Mike, what do you have to say?
I see where Julie's coming from, and that's why I think in at least old school D&D, there's an advantage to that pseudo-medieval baseline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you leave things more or less everybody's preconceived notions of a medieval village or a medieval lord or that sort of thing, it helps them to get into that mindset. And then, at least in my games, what I do is I try to lull them into, okay, everything is pretty much as medieval as you're expecting. Except now one of the serving boys has gone missing. Or, you know, and you find his head, you know, stuck out on a pike in front of the barn. Well, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
Very.
Yeah, like,
and
that's kind of where I'm
That's
what I'm
not
saying.
Terribly subtle. I mean, obviously I do more subtle things when I can, but it's an extreme example of you get them lulled into a certain way of looking at the idea, and then once they've got their notion, turn it a little on their head.
Right. All right.
So, yeah. And people can be just as interesting monsters as the ones in the dungeon, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, if you have any further questions about this, anyone out there, you can contact us, how, Glenn?
Or if you have your own experiences you want to relate, you can contact us at saveordiepodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can go to...
What's the number, Vince?
Or you can go to...
The Dragon's Foot Forum, sub-forum for basic D&D. You'll find us there.
Or you can leave us a voicemail at 570-290-7283... The Save or Die Hotline.
That's right.
And you can go visit the website, and there's a great article up by the Secret DM, who is back and writing again. He wrote something up for Valentine's Day.
And Crispy did a good one too.
The Power of Love. Crispy did one a while ago, which he hasn't followed up with another one.
A couple weeks. I'm writing it at the moment. There's a lot of stuff that I want to touch upon on it, so it's going to be kind of long.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We should get Julie to do one.
He's balls to the rules.
Yes.
Balls to the rules. Yes, Julie, you should write an article sometime.
Yeah.
About your experiences.
Oh,
copious amounts of free time.
Yes. My copious. Right now, I'm just desperately trying to make it to April when I have hopefully some guest producers having produced some shows so that I can write scripts for the rest of the year for my show.
She's balls to the mic.
Wow. That note, we're going to go into Products of Your Imagination.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier, and we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt. Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons & Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
So, products of your imagination this week. What do we have, Mike?
B9, Castle Caldwell and Beyond.
Yay.
By Harry Knuckles. I'm not making that
name.
Up. Look at it.
Yeah, that's his name.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Harry Knuckles. And I asked Frank Mincer about this once. I'm like, this is a joke pseudonym, right? He's like, no, seriously, there was a guy working at TSR named Harry W. Knuckles.
All right, we have to get that guy on the podcast.
Harry White Knuckles.
Are his parents dead yet?
And that's when I shot them, Your Honor. So,
I'd say.
Yep, not a jury in the world will convict me.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that because I was pronouncing Harry Knuckles.
No.
I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. Knuckles.
So for this adventure, I think a 1-3. This is level 1-3. It is a perfect. I have to say, perfect adventure to run for a rainy day if you have nothing else to do, or you're going to a convention. These are good convention modules. There's a bunch
yes,
of. There's four. No, five. Right. Five.
Five.
Five. Sorry.
Although two of them are sort of connected, but they
the
don't.
First
have
two are. Yeah.
Yeah. There's five different adventures in there. The first two are connected, and they all have different plots, and you can pretty much do it with different DMs and different groups. It's all up to you. I think this is perfect to run at a convention. Actually, I was thinking about running one at a convention, so.
I thought, okay. And I told Glenn this earlier, that it occurred to me that this module would have been perfect to go into the Mincer basic set.
Yeah.
Because it's five short adventures that are all good at introducing not only to D&D, but also a lot of the D&D tropes. Mm-hmm.
And I do like the description that they give you in the beginning of the module to tell you, you know, make sure you know the rules. Because if you don't know the rules, you'll be looking things up in the book constantly. And make sure you can look things up constantly, otherwise you'll ruin the flow of the game.
Yeah,
I was like, what?
Exactly.
And it's the first module I've seen them actually refer to saying, if you're going to enter the expert set, mm-hmm. you know.
Yep. Yeah, there's some things in there from the expert set which did strike me as a little jarring.
Yeah.
I mean, why put it in there, you know, when this is for 1-3?
Mm-hmm. The first two are connected only because it just looks like Castle Caldwell Part 1 and Part 2. I don't know why they just couldn't have made it one adventure.
I do like the I bought this new... what was it? I bought this new castle, but there's monsters in it, so I'm going to take these first level characters and have them clear it out for me. For 100 gold apiece.
Up to 250.
Yeah.
Well, that's the opening to Tegel Manor.
But
yeah,
first
much.
Level characters worth 100 gold apiece? Don't you think that's a bit
well, the
much?
Whole treasure in this thing was really over the top.
Yeah.
It was.
And I know basic expert is supposed to give more, you know, gold than usual, but come on.
And it's the mansion itself is a little wonky, to say the least. At least their placement of people and monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've got goblins on one end who lairs in there, and on the other end we have these merchants who are coming from some place and using this as a rest stop.
That's the one I really just couldn't understand. We're merchants traveling on the dangerous roads. Hey, look, there's a castle of monsters. Let's stay the night.
Yeah.
Who does that?
I mean, I walk in there and go, what are we here for? Why didn't you guys clear these goblins out?
Just as wonky as B8 with the, what was it, the, Liz was saying, the gnome with the dwarf on the boat looking for water in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just, and you all find that all the merchants, practically all of them, what, are lying in bed with their weapons?
Yeah.
Yeah. Every room. He is lying in bed with an axe. He is lying in bed with a sword. He's like, what?
It's like, what?
I know you're in a monster place, so you want to keep your weapon nearby, but.
Well, this is my rifle. This is my gun. You know. It's...
Whoa, Glenn.
Anyway.
This is my sword. What? I named it after a girl.
Well, it was written by Harry Knuckles, so.
Ding, 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 ding,
dear, dear, dear. Anyway.
We have to find this Harry Knuckles guy and put him on the show. Yeah, I want to hear his reasoning behind this first module. Yes, Julie?
One of the things that struck me as interesting is the men and women's restrooms.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Or bathing chambers, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, okay.
Well, it was a castle, so okay.
In the third adventure or fourth, The Great Escape.
Yeah.
These are some very clean people.
Yes. Yes.
A lot of baths and bathing.
Yeah. So in a future episode, Save or Die has Harry Knuckles. Yay.
I do have to say this is one of the better ones out of the B ones for the last half that we've been doing.
Yeah.
Short adventures, yeah. I think it's pretty useful. Some of the plot premises I'm a little askance on, but
wow, yeah.
At the same time, if you're using it to introduce brand new people.
Yeah.
And there's plenty.
What we consider kind of cliche is a really good introduction.
I like fact that it's like these little broken up modules, 3 to 4 hours, you can play them in and you're done.
It seems very clean and. Simple to play. I mean, not a lot of messy subplots, not a lot of things that you're not going to be able to handle right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something that you can accomplish, get it under your belt, and move on feeling like your character has actually experienced something.
Yeah. And there's plenty of empty rooms in these dungeons.
I liked that.
All with a little box description that says, you see an empty room.
Yeah.
That did annoy me. A lot of times in the box text, it describes, okay, on the wall you see stripes of yellow and black and green. And then further on in the what one assumes is the DM's note, it says, there are stripes on the wall of leather of yellow, black, and green. Like, you just said that. Why do you need to repeat it? Obviously, the DM read that part.
Oh, it's just in case the players come in from a different vantage point.
I also saw a point where they put box text in, which was obviously supposed to be just DM's information. I could see like a new DM going, and these have things. Oh, I wasn't supposed to say that.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I've done that.
Oh, and there was a locked, there was a trap chest that said, your thief should have pick jocks skill.
Pick jocks. Oh, yeah.
Balls to that.
I've had dwarves who can pick their jock. I don't need a thief to do it. Yeah.
Well, apparently there's some typos that they've missed.
Yeah, I know. It's just that was what struck me. Pick jocks.
Okay. Wow, you know, some people have itchy jocks.
I picked the one in the armor.
Yeah.
Now, was it the fourth one?
The Great Escape? Oh, The Great Escape, okay.
Now, that was interesting. I mean, that to me is kind of cliche, too. But once again, for new players, this is going to be, oh, wow, they captured us. We don't have our stuff. We got to get out. That's going to be like new and just, wow, you know, it's going to awe.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and the Castle Caldwell at the beginning, you've got the talking statue.
Right.
You've got answering questions. You've got the quote-unquote magic pools, which in this case are coffins, but it's still the same effect. You've got the puzzle trap. Yeah. You know, it's a very...
You've got these silly words you have to say.
The silly words you have to say. Oh, God. The bit of humor in it. You know, this is
that
all
one
very
is so old of a joke, though.
Yeah.
I dirty it up.
I suspect that might have been put there particularly for the groans.
Yeah.
But,
I seem to remember that from, say, a Great Gazoo episode of the Flintstones.
Yes.
Yes, dum-dum.
Well, I remember from Cub Tim Scouts.
Cub Scouts. Wow.
Okay. And the last one seems to be D&D does Tegel Manor.
Sort of.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Sort of. Although this isn't supposed to be haunted necessarily.
With an evil temple priestess who has way too much time on her hands.
All in all, lots of fun. So let's rate this because we're getting on a little about an hour and 15 minutes here. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Mike, since you're talking, you're gonna go first. Dragon ratings, and our new rating for this week, as we started last week, play it, shred it, or trade it?
I'll say 2.5.
Okay. And play it, shred it, or trade it?
I'd play it. I'd do some changes.
So Mike's going to keep
it. On the whole, yeah, I'd play him. Actually, I've already run Castle Caldwell before.
Cool.
So the rest of them, yeah, I'd run them.
Julie?
Yeah, I'd run it.
You keep it then, okay.
Yeah. I don't know, it does seem to be a good solid beginning module, and there's just not enough of those. I mean, there never are enough of those because you always end up with people who have to start a new character and they've already played all the ones you've already done.
Here we go to as fun as it is, keep on the Borderlands again.
Oh Lord.
So out of 5, Julie?
3.5.
All right, 3.5, wow. Glenn?
I'll give it 4 for new players, because, like I said, you're right. There's not enough. You can only run In Search of Adventure and Keep on the Borderlands so many times.
Yeah.
And it's just nice, solid work, nice, solid foundation for games there. And any of these, I think, could kick off a campaign.
Yeah.
Just with a little work. Keep it, shred it, or I'd play it. I'd play it and cherish it. I would keep it. I mean, it's not like exactly a big classic, but it's like, all right, I'm hanging on to this. You know,
yeah.
And I'm just every, you know, I find new players. Okay, let's go to Castle Caldwell. All right. You know, something I could learn and just like run off the cuff whenever I want. I keep it.
All right. I'm going to give this a 3.5 because I like it. It's very convention-like-y. Convention-friendly, I should say.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the adventures in it. They're interesting. There are some weird quirks to them, but they're very interesting, and I like the guy's name, the module, so Harry knows. So I'm going with a 3.5, and I'm going with a keep and play it. So this would definitely stay on my shelf.
Yeah.
So that averages about to, what, a 3 between all the things? Probably around there.
Just to speak up for people who are like, well, Crispy didn't vote. I didn't get a chance to read it, so.
Crispy's a bum, that's why.
Yeah.
Bad Crispy.
Crispy.
Well, it's now because I failed at reading the show notes on the spreadsheet that we have.
The one that nobody's adding anything to?
Yeah.
Okay.
You filled your saving throw versus email?
Game Ogre actually kind of took what I wanted to talk about, which was the different types of retro clones anyway, so.
Feel free to add to that spreadsheet at any time you want, Crispy.
All right. I might.
All right, and that's going to wrap it up for this week, as we're going to head down the highway with our B9 module in hand.
Torn backpack,
saying goodbye. Glenn, how are you coming down the highway this week?
I'm being chased by ogres and goblins with hairy knuckles. And I don't want to know how they got them. So, time to go.
Next week, we'll be back. We're going to be reviewing B10, which is one of the most popular Bs out of the modules, and it's the most expensive one if you want to go try buying it now.
Oh, is that Night Howlers?
Stark Terror.
Night Stark Terror, that's right. Because it, for various reasons, yes, it's very expensive.
It's very hard to find.
And just to warn you, I may not be on the show next week. So. Everybody's going, yay!
No, Glenn!
Glenn.
Well, I know Crispy will be back next week.
Hell yeah.
And we won't have Glenn because he'll be busy doing other stuff, maybe.
Maybe.
But I'm going to say, you know, save or die. Can you make the save? And good night, everybody.
Thank you, Julie.
Night.
Good night.
Was I lugubrious enough?
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit saveordie at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / saveordiepodcast or follow them on Twitter @TheEvilDM.